and welcome to episode 16 of the Back to Front Show. This is the micro edition, and as always, joined live from Wells in the heart of Somerset. Actually, is it Somerset?
Yes, it is Somerset.
Mr. Kieran Masterton, how are you, Kieran?
Good morning. I'm pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Yes, it is almost morning.
Well, oh yeah, sorry, good afternoon.
Almost. Depending on where you're listening, actually, it could be any time, anywhere, couldn't it?
It could, yeah.
Such is the joy of the podcast medium. Yes, good day.
Good day to you.
Good day, fair listeners. We had a few crackles, didn't we, on the last show?
It was rubbish.
As I said, we had a few crackles, but we've got a new approach.
We have.
For this week's show, and hopefully we have a way of eradicating any crackles, which we can only blame on Skype.
We can only blame it on Skype.
We do like Skype, mind. It's, you know, it's free. And it does the job, mostly.
And they're recording everything you say.
Yes. So we do like Skype. And should Skype wish to partner with us on any future podcasts, we'll be happily take your coin. Or Skype credit. Anyways, again, busy old week since episode 15.
Busy, yeah.
You were up in the Scotchland.
I was up in... have we covered this already? I was up in Glasgow.
Were you in... No, you were off to Glasgow, I think, early doors.
That's true, yeah. And I went and I was there and I came back.
You came, you saw, you coded, you came back.
I didn't code.
You didn't code?
It was all schmoozing. It was all what you do for a living.
Right. Yeah, I did. I was a little bit worried about you, actually, because I saw an Instagram before 9 o'clock. And I think that must be a first.
No.
Yeah, it was. It was of a kind of envy-inducing flat white somewhere in Glasgow.
Yeah, it was a Tinderbox, which is a very good coffee shop.
Is it on a...
In Merchant City in Glasgow.
Cologne and Small Standards?
No, but it's...
But you have to say that, don't you?
Well, yeah, true. it's on the reputable side of coffee shops, you know, sort of not quite Maxwell standard, but just a little bit below. Lots of the coffee shops in London are quite like that, you know, sort of a bit more chainy than Maxwell.
A bit more chainy.
Well, you know, you walk in and you just say, can I have a flat white? There's no choice of coffee or whatever.
Ah, yes. Yes.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
No, but it did look good. But this is the new gig with Distrify.
Yes, started officially this week, yeah.
How's it going?
Great, yeah, really good. I haven't really got a job title. I'm sort of minister without portfolio.
I think you should have gone for that. I would love that, you know.
Yeah, I think I'm product development is the loose title.
Loose. Very loose. Loose. Yes, schmoozer without portfolio, that's what you should be.
Yeah.
How often do you get to go up to Scotland then?
Don't know really. They're moving their offices from Glasgow to Edinburgh,
surely, because
they all live in Edinburgh, strangely, and can come across to Glasgow. So I think probably about 3 or 4 times a year.
Nice.
Yeah. Very nice. Part of the world.
Very nice. I was at the Generate Conf last week.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
So this is the conference run by. Future publishing, but also .NET guys, Creative Block, all that stuff.
Yes, your alma mater, or whatever you would call it.
My former employer. Yes. I'm future alum.
Alum, yes, definitely.
What my bio should say.
Future alum, yes, definitely. No, it was really good. It was run by a good friend of the show, or mine. Actually, you probably met her, Joe, who I used to work with. And so there's some trademark Joeisms there, which is all good. But no, it's really good. I got invited along to do a sort of Q&A with 3 of the speakers the preceding night, which is in a little underground bar. Literally, not, you know, anyone can walk in. It was literally underground. I'm not saying I'm kind of hip and cool or anything like that. I'm far too old. But in a little underground bar, and I got to chat for sort of 10, 15 minutes with 3 of the speakers, which was interesting on a number of counts. The first one, which when we get there, they'd given us 2 mics as requested, but then they told us you can only use 1 at a time.
Useful.
And I was like, what do you mean 1 at a time? She said, well, actually, no, you can probably only use 1. Only 1 can be turned on at any one time. I was like, that's really not great for an interview.
No, she had to pass it back and forth.
We had to do a little bit, you know, back and forth.
It's almost like you're on a red carpet then.
Yes, it was a little bit like that. And I couldn't really, you know, interject and do that kind of thing too well. But we managed to get through that. The second was hearing sort of the dull thudding bass of you know, the music of today from the room next door whilst asking the question. Music of the youth of today. whilst asking Mark Bolton his opinion on responsive typography. It was a most strange juxtaposition.
Nice.
That made me chuckle inwardly and quite possibly outwardly as well. Nice. There was a funny, very funny moment when I'd asked a serious question to Mark, and the table in the back of the room, which was populated by the future exec, burst into spontaneous laughter, completely out of context, and sort of everyone turned around. So I had to say something there, but it was it went down well. It was good.
See, kicking off at the back,
kicking off the future posse. But no, it was really good. Grand Connaught Rooms, some really interesting talks. Mr. Coos gave a talk, and he was the guy who pimped out your Mondo artiste. Mr. Moss, yeah, that's why that was. Yeah.
Ollie Moss.
Yeah, and so and Mark's talk was really interesting about the work he'd done. Mark Bolton's at CERN, and but yeah, Gavin Strange, a jam factory, a local
legend in our time,
a local legend and a global legend, most likely. His talk was really interesting about just sort of getting out there and doing stuff and saying yes to things. And he actually took 5 days off work to go and film. He didn't know who it was at the time. A couple of guys, famous graffiti artist, spray painting a, you know, out of use airliner, which was really interesting. So he actually goes and does work in his holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But
I follow him on Twitter, and you know, he's always got a lot of side projects on, whether it's vinyl toys or
I know
or a film, Bikes Mind, or whether it's a grommet. In fact,
he's done a grommet, as in Wallace and Gromit, and he talked about that. But he also talked about the Bikes Mind stuff and how he redid the trailer. He sort of teased that there'll be a Bikes Mind 2, but actually redid the whole trailer for Bikes Mind 1.
April 1st, wasn't it?
April 1st, but instead of adults, had kids in all the roles. He's nice. Like, why did he do it? I don't know. It was fun. So there's a lot of that. But yeah, really, really good day. And I thought the interviews weren't too bad either. So it was a good couple of days. But
nice one.
Yeah, more events soon, I am sure. You're not booked in to go to any, are you, this year?
The only event that I'm going to is a little soiree being thrown by a group of people called Viewport Industries.
Ah, yes, can't talk about that.
Is it undercover, is it?
Yeah.
Under wraps?
No, not really. It's just small. But I'm sure I'll regale you with the tales from the event world in future episodes. But
indeed,
as we've waffled on again, I do like a waffle, mind you.
You do.
We also should apologise in advance for any slurping sounds. I can't lay claim to those. That's Mr. Masterton drinking tea.
So I've got a brew, yeah.
You got a brew. Have you got any Dunkers?
No, I haven't. No, it's green tea.
Do people in America, do they dunk? Is that a dunking nation? Do we know?
I've never seen anyone. I've seen somebody, a cop.
A what?
In a Dunkin' Donuts. A cop in a Dunkin' Donuts. I know. This is it's unheard of.
A policeman.
A polis in a Dunkin' Donuts dunking a donut in a coffee.
Wow! Did what, whole or?
No, a sort of
half bitten.
I'd say it was about a third was left. A third of a ring.
It's right. It's not a nation I normally associate with dunking. But if anyone's listening from across the pond, please do let us know what biscuits
if you dunk.
What biscuits dunk well?
Well, we should clarify. Biscuits aren't. Oh. What we're thinking about Americans. Biscuits are cookies.
Yes.
So if you dunk cookies,
yeah, you don't want to be dunking an American biscuit. That could get. Very
no, that could, that's a sort of a scone type situation. Yeah, we don't want to get into that.
Biscuits and gravy. Anyway, this is not, as yet, a food show. Who knows?
No. Who knows in the future?
What might happen, as they sound Stingray in the next half hour. But anyways, on with the show.
Indeed.
And I can't actually talk about this first one. Well, I could, but you actually chose this one. So why don't you kick it off, Kieran?
It might be a conflict of interest.
Just an interest, really.
Yeah. So basically, this is Shopify's Build a Business competition.
Shopify, you say?
And obviously, you know, we should acknowledge at this point that Keir Whittaker is within the Shopify fold. And this is nowhere a plug. It's literally, I'm just interested. So this is their Build a Business competition. They've run it for, what, 3 or 4 years? I think
this is the fourth, I think.
Okay. I've certainly been aware of it for about 3 years. And I found out about it, I think this might have actually been the first time I found out about Shopify as well. I found out about it via Mr. Ferris.
Well, you've only just found out about Shopify, despite wearing their hoodies for the last year and a half.
I think I'm fine. I'm a huge brand advocate of theirs.
Yes, exactly.
in more ways than one. But they, no, I think I found out about this about 3 years ago when they first did this competition, because it was sort of quite high profile and Tim Ferriss was involved and Mark Cuban is involved this year, and Gary Vaynerchuk and Tina Roth Eisenberg and all these people.
Lil John, don't forget Lil John.
I can't say it like they do. Lil John.
Lil John.
Lil. I always want to say Lilt. Yeah. So yeah, they and Chase Jarvis as well, which will excite Greg_A.
It will.
Big style. Who is actually quite, you know, a cool guy, Chase Jarvis. But anyway, this is a competition that they are running annually, I guess. There doesn't seem to be any sign that it's going to stop. And it's the chance to win how much, Keir? 50 grand, is it?
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. And basically, it's whoever makes the most money on their shop in the next 8 months. But it has to be a new business.
That's right.
So you have to start a new business. You have to pick a category. With that category, you'll get a mentor.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. If you win. Yeah.
If you win. Yeah. So you get. So basically, if you're if you pick what is electronics and gadgets, you get Tim Ferriss. If you pick photography and art, you get Chase Jarvis. Sports and recreation, you get Mr. Mark Cuban.
Apparently, he's quite
the Dallas
wealthy
Mavericks.
And owns
apparently he
some
has
sports.
Got a
franchises.
Few quid in his pocket.
Yeah.
So yeah, these guys are all could be your mentor if you win in that category.
It's really interesting, actually. Looking back, if you go to the page, Shopify.com build-a-business. Dodo Case was the first winner in 2010, and they've gone on to do, you know, I mean, how many people have you seen with a Dodo Case for their iPad or anything like that?
Literally hundreds, probably personally.
The 2011 winner was interesting. It's called Coffee Julie. And it's these kind of special coffee bean things that stainless steel that regulate the temperature of your coffee. Super clever.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then it kind of went multiple winners last year, and that's when the current format kind of came into play. So I think there were like 4 or 5 winners last year. Again, it was the categories. And everyone flew down or got flown down from wherever they were to New York for a few days and met the mentors. And, you know, it's a really interesting competition. You know, as you say, you've got to start your business and then enter and so
you build it over an 8 month period.
So again, it's just and
all the winners last year had what, $1 million in revenue,
something like that. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, really, really, really successful. And it's quite interesting being on the inside and hearing about, you know, the people as they progressing through it as well. You know, you get reports over the email and things like that, and it's just, yeah, people are doing some amazing stuff. And I just think it proves that, you know, you should just get out there and try these things on. You know, I'm sounding like a pitch now, but it is so easy to get started.
No, definitely. I think the video, the pitch video for the competition is really inspirational as well. I mean, it's mainly Gary V,
of course, the man can talk
it. The man can talk. So was it Damon John?
Damon John,
where's,
yeah.
Where's that gone? He gone. Yeah, there he is. Yeah, Damon John. So there's those two guys basically talking about the, you know, the premise of the competition and stuff. But it is pretty inspirational, and they're just encouraging you to, you know, start a business and go for it. Unfortunately, it's only available to those in the United States of America. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can enter if you're in Canada as well, but I think there's some prohibitive laws about giving cash, so you can get a voucher instead. So it's slightly different rules, but yeah, I'll try and apply any pressure that I can to bring it to this side of the pond in future, because I think this would work really well in the UK.
That's fantastic. Yeah,
I'd like to. Yeah, I mean, Arianna Huffington as well. It's in association with the Huff Post or the Huff Post.
Yeah, it is. And it's also got a whole bunch of other supporters: PayPal, Google.co, Facebook, and Twitter.
Yeah, it's pretty big in Shopify land. This so and the prize is you know, I think just
epic
getting to meet all those people, not just your mentor, but you get to meet, you know. You know, and have a great day and chat. And,
but come on, you know, if you get Mark Cuban as a mentor or Chase Jarvis as a mentor, that's pretty, you know, incredible.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, you know, Gary Vee, Tino as well, done amazing things. Damon John as well.
Lil John.
Lil John. Well. And, you know, if you're Tim Ferriss, you're basically going to be able to run your business in 5 minutes a week. So, you know, you can start another one. I mean, it's a win-win. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, definitely check it out. I very, very excited to see where this goes over the next 8 months and who comes out as winners this year.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So that's the Shopify builder business. Well worth a look. Now, where are my notes? There they are. Right. So, it's you again.
It's me. Yeah. It's me again. This is an article that I read. Now, I'm not a designer. I preface everything I say about design with that because I don't want to be attacked.
Why not?
For not getting it.
Yeah, you design. I've seen your sites.
Yeah. anyway, so. This is the dribbleization of design.
Not the simplest thing to say.
I did practice that before starting. This is Paul Adams.
Right.
Who you may know. He's Paddy on the Twits.
On the Twits.
And he's head of product design at Intercom.
Dot.io.
.io, is it?
.io, isn't it? Intercom.io.
But before that, he was at Google and Facebook, so he's got some pedigree.
He's got some history.
Got some chops, as they say around these parts. But anyway, this is the dribbleization of design, and it's effectively, I'm not going to call it a rant, but it's borderline ranty about how design... And this isn't an attack on dribble, I should... hasten to add.
Absolutely not, no.
I think that there's a lot of good stuff happens with Dribbble, but I think that that this article in particular is talking about how the community shares their design and how they react to that. And Dribbble's just his example of this, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
So it's not a I hate Dribbble post. It's about, the way that designers design something, put it on Dribbble, and then everyone starts to mimic how those things look. And design becomes about aesthetics and not about solving business problems.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I guess it's more of a thing about... critique, isn't it, as well, which is, there's a long-standing history of design critique and group critique and all that kind of stuff. Certainly from people that I know that went to art and design colleges, that was, a big part of the course, people getting together and working through and, you're critiquing, but I think critique and criticism are two different things, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So tell us a bit more about it. What's the premise? What's his angle?
He starts off talking about how people mimic each other on Dribbble, which is fairly superficial. But then he gets more and more in depth. And the bit that was really interesting to me was the stuff about. I mean, he sort of encapsulates this all in product design. That's where he talks about product design, and he's specifically employing product designers at the moment at Intercom.
Right.
And the really interesting bit for me was the discussion about when he received CVs plus portfolios from people applying for these jobs, that the most interesting ones were the ones that included sketches and diagrams and pros and cons lists and like the solutions to real problems, things they'd worked on, the trade-offs between really glossy design and the practical solution for the user, and also prototypes and that kind of thing using real data. And he said the things that were the worst to receive were just flat glossy PNGs and PDFs of wireframes and that kind of thing, that are sort of pixel perfect,
yeah
and don't tell you anything about whether this person can actually solve business problems with with design. And really, he then goes into a bit of a rant about people redesigning stuff. People, he said it's pure folly.
Oh, yeah.
To redesign other people's work.
Yeah.
So, the Yahoo logo, changing iOS 7, fixes to Facebook, the new Twitter logo, American Airlines rebrand, as just things he lists here as being things that really frustrated him when people started, banding those things around on Dribbble because, they're completely they're capsule pieces. These are things that they don't know the pressures of the organization. They don't know the business decisions they're making. There's no knowledge of requirements or constraints or politics. And he's just basically saying that this encourages this sort of design for aesthetic's sake rather than design for practical solution sake.
Yeah, just to play devil's advocate, though, don't you think... If people want to have a bit of fun with out of context redesigns of logos or Do you think that's necessarily bad if they're just passing it off as a bit of, you know, I did this one evening?
I think it totally depends on the way in which it's delivered. You know, if it's someone's excuse me, seen the Yahoo logo and thought, you know, oh, I'd have tweaked this and just done it to show people.
Yeah,
I think that's one thing. But very often when I see these things on Dribbble or when I see them tweeted on Twitter, it's often like the new Yahoo logo is total crap or whatever, and then they proceed to show you how they would have designed it.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is that sort of, you know, they've dismissed potentially months, if not years, of development work.
Yeah, research.
That these people have done, and the research, and keeping in mind all the different products they've got and all the constraints they have because of those products. And also, you know, again, you've got no idea the sort of politics that goes on in the boardroom about these things, you know, who came up with the old logo, all these things, you know, egos, all that stuff is completely thrown out the window. And you know, this guy in his bedroom goes, I could have done this better.
Yeah, I think, it's interesting. I mean, I read a great article on Medium, again, about a guy who'd redesigned or had, you know, taken a stab at the boarding pass. There was a couple of blog posts a few years ago they did that, and he kind of referenced those and updated them. But it was a you know, well thought out, and I'll put it in the show notes, a well thought out piece, and, you know, some practicalities of actually being at the airport and having, you know, where is the fold, where is the sort of perforation, how, you know, the information that you actually need to see, like your gate, why do you have to, you know, search really hard to find that, and kind of done it. It was just really well thought out, and you thought, yeah, as a piece of kind of design work and thought process, this is good.
It was really good, yeah.
Dribbble, I, you know, have to say, because it's something I truly believe, I think Dribbble's a great piece of work, and the community that it's got is amazing. But it's quite interesting. I think I've got one Dribbble on there, but one shot, I should say. But Elliot posts stuff, you know, from things that we've been working on together, and, you know, the first comment will be, "Oh yeah, I'm really not sure about the type you've chosen." And it's, you know, it's a small section of a design, and it's like, well, that's the type that I'm going with. You know, I think you need to be 3 pixels this way or whatever. And it's like, I don't know. I suppose you can't. There's nothing you can do about the comments you get or the feedback you get, but it has kind of turned into that a little bit, I think, the minutiae of out of context stuff. But
and also, I think what he's saying is that you can sort of squint your eyes and it all looks the same, especially product design stuff. So if you're looking at like all the different accounting apps or whatever together,
yeah,
you squint your eyes, they all look the same, and it's because. Partly because of this culture of sharing not sharing your process, but sharing your finished product.
Mm.
And I think Dribbble was designed with the idea that you would share your process, but that's not actually how 99% of people use it.
Yeah, I think I remember years ago, Dan Cederholm used to do this blog post every now and again. It was something like, on SimpleBits.com, is what are you working on now? Take a screenshot of your desktop, and you'd have these people literally posting all these things up, and it would be like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But you couldn't quite work out what it was. And I think that's where the initial idea of Dribbble came from, where, you know, what are you working on, sort of thing, little snapshots and insights. And the commentary angle is quite interesting. But as you say, the post isn't about Dribbble at all. It's more about this.
No.
This kind of sort of the way that the design is going. But
he does go on then to talk about the design methodologies they use within Intercom, for example, and suggest, you know, more positive. You know, he is a constructive piece by the end. You know, yes, there is a big sort of rant against people doing this sort of Me Too style design, but then there is a whole piece about how he uses. Clay Christensen's job framework, for example, for product design.
Yeah.
So some really interesting stuff in there. I mean, it's a long post.
It is a long post, but I can't help, as I've sort of skimmed it today when you popped it in the show notes, that this is probably one of the most effective job adverts I've seen.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Really, really brilliant from that respect. He's written a very opinionated piece, which basically lays out the company and their approach and what they believe. And so if you're reading that and agreeing with it, you're probably going to start thinking, this is great. You know, wow, these guys think like me. This is what I believe too. And then you get to the end, it's like, you know, by the way, we're hiring. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's the last line on the article. Somebody says, did I mention
yeah.
we're hiring product designers at Intercom?
Yes, brilliant. Really, really clever. The Intercom guys doing some great stuff over there in Dublin and beyond, I believe. So, yeah, definitely check that one out. It is a long read, but worth a few minutes of your day.
Definitely.
While you're dunking your hobnob in your tea.
So my and finally.
Oh, have you got an and finally?
It's not an and finally.
Not no. really,
it's
just
a,
is it?
It's a less substantial choice cut, shall we say. And this is a Facebox, which it's not just Facebox, though. It's Facebox and UIFaces.com. But the reason... So what happened was I saw this thing, Facebox.io.
Facebox.io.
Facebox.io, which for those that don't know, it's basically 50 stock photos of real people that you can use in your UI design. So say you need to have a stream of people commenting on something in your user interface, or you have to have a profile. You can use these people's photographs free. It's not free of charge. Sorry, it's $35. But for a limited time, you can get $10 off, so it's $25. But their rights cleared.
Oh, I see.
Totally royalty free, and you can just take them and plonk them into your design. So I really like this. I thought it was like, you know, so it's a problem that people have, and people end up using their friends' faces and stuff, don't they?
Yes, because exactly.
They don't want to get sued for using someone else's. But then I noticed I'd found that link, and then I saw Daniel Howells tweeted out that he loved it as well, and someone replied to him, someone we mutual follow or whatever, and said, why would you pay for it when you can use UIFaces.com?
Ah.
And so I went to UIFaces.com, and it's essentially the same thing, but it's free, and it's cleared images, and it's and you know they just do it a little bit differently. They say, just tell us if you want your face to appear here.
Oh, right, so okay.
They've obviously not gone and cleared the rights all, you know, with specific people to give, because obviously Facebox.io has got like a kind of nice mix of ethnicity and all those things.
Yeah.
But this is just people saying, you know, hey, you know, my face appear. But you can slide the spacing around, you can slide the avatar size around, so you can go down to, you know, 32 pixels or up to 64 or whatever. And you can set a border radius to make them circular or rounded edges or whatever. And then they just suggest that you hit Command-Shift-4 and cut them out.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So they're not actually offering you any sort of download. It's just like...
I was about to ask, yeah.
Yeah, it's just literally totally free, and you can scale them as you want. But this actually makes it very quick, I was thinking.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you just need a big grid of faces or something to put on a, let's say, you know, you're designing a event website and you want speakers, you can just go, yeah, give me the top four and give them to me at 64 pixels and put the spacing at 10 pixels. Cheers. Copy that, stick it straight in your design.
No, it's very clever.
So I actually prefer UI Faces, and it's free. But, you know, if you want sort of A, more faces and B, a sort of nicer broad range of ethnicity and all that stuff, then you can pay $25 for Facebox.
It's quite interesting. I'd love to know the numbers on this, how well it does. Because, you know, if say suddenly sell 1,000 of these, that's a decent business, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny that there was the classic divide on Twitter. I saw people tweeting it, and people going, $25?
Yeah.
for 50 faces, I could just steal them off my Twitter feed. You know, so I think it has divided people, you know, in a similar way that we talked about previously about products for developers, and you're just trying to cash in. But I think if you're working on a big project, especially if you've got a design agency or something,
oh,
come on.
Brilliant, yeah.
You know, $25, like, to use... You know, and just stick them in your Dropbox, and all your staff have got access to them.
No,
I think it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Very, very clever. I mean, yeah, that probably took them a few days to put together, and hopefully they'll sell a few thousand. And
it's probably their mates. Let's be honest. You know, they've probably just gone around and got a broad range of 50 people between them. You know,
it's kind of Brooklyn in avatar form, isn't it?
It is. Yes, it is.
And they're all smiling, happy people. I like it.
There's some hipsters amongst them. I saw an orange beanie a minute ago scrolling past.
Hold on. No. Oh.
There's someone who looks just like Vitaly.
Is there? Oh, with the hat on? No.
No, not with the hat on.
Maybe it is Vitaly.
It's not. You'll see him in a minute, he's got a check shirt. Anyway.
Anyway, we digress. But yeah, check it out. What's that? Yeah. Facebox.io. We need an .io. I can't believe we haven't got an .io domain.
Everybody seems to have an .io. Yeah. I think everything we're featuring has an .io.
Yes. Anyways. On with the show.
Indeed.
EO. My first one this week is a mac.appstorm.net article.
Whoa,
it's all, okay. I know. It's all about pimping mail.app. You know how we talked a few months ago, weeks even, days, who knows, about our woe, because our lives are so hard that we have time to spend researching email clients.
Yes, and we've both... I'd like to mention that I've gone back to Sparrow.
Oh, my gosh.
After some people going, well, why aren't you using Sparrow then? After listening to the show, and I've gone back to Sparrow. There wasn't any real logical reason for me not to be using Sparrow.
True.
And I concede that point.
Okay. Well, having deviated yet again, I have stuck with Mail. But there are a few things that didn't quite work out. You know, he's like, oh, how do I do this? How do I do that? And but there's quite actually a big plugin. Communities may be too much of a word, but there's a lot of plugins you can get for Mail.app. There's a really nice one called Attachment Tamer, which I use, which allows you to drag attachments actually into the email, and you can preview them using the spacebar and all that kind of stuff. But this article goes into quite in-depth detail about how one, the author, Pierre Wizzler. Wizzler, W-I-Z-L-A. It's actually from January 18th, so it's not new by any stretch, but I just came across it. But how he's pimped out, and I'm doing the old bunny ears there, mailed it out for sort of, you know, real sort of, what's the word? You know, life hacked it, so it's going to be like,
yeah,
doom, ready to go, and, you know, you're going to be a ninja,
mail client.
Ninja of the inbox type stuff. So, yeah, just loads of stuff there about some of the creating your own keyboard shortcuts. So one of the ones that I've, now the muscle memory has got used to is kind of, I never know, it's command, isn't it? The Apple key, is that the
command?
Command-Shift-D is send, where I was so used to...
That shows your age there, Keir. I call it the Apple key as well.
I know, but it never used to have the command on it, you know?
No.
Back when I had my 1 megabyte Mac Plus in 1986. but like, you know, the command return, which you're used to in like Gmail and stuff like that. So you can hook all these things up. But then things like smart mailboxes, how you can filter mail that comes in from certain recipients or meets certain criteria, all this stuff that you can do in Gmail, but it's kind of a little bit hidden in mail. And certain UI customizations like the menu bars and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, if you like mail.app and you want to take it that little bit further, then it's a really, really sort of quick and easy accessible article that tells you how to do that.
Yeah.
I'm also intrigued to know, I think it was updated recently. It kind of came up and said my attachment tamer was incompatible with the latest release. So I think it'd been updated. But I'm intrigued to see if they do much with it in Mavericks, apart from make it flat and probably white, which I wouldn't mind. But I'm wondering whether they'll do... whether there'll be any big revelations. They don't seem to iterate on mail too much, but I suppose it's not too much.
They started to do more on it. There was a period of time where it really didn't change at all. I think they were very aware that not many people were using it.
And then
I think they've thought to themselves, you know, they probably looked around and seen all these things like Sparrow and all this stuff and Mailbox, etc., and gone, you know, we really should up our game in the mail world, you know?
Yeah, there's competition in those hills. But, an interesting article if you use mail.app, worth a look. Maybe if you use one or two of the ideas there, so it might make your inbox management a little bit easier. But
definitely.
Mine are a little bit shorter than yours. My sections. You picked the long articles today, but I've got a couple of quick fire ones. The next one's the Happy Cogway. Did you have a look at that?
Yes, I have looked at that. Yeah, it's very much up my street.
It is, and I like this because I think Happy Cog, you know, a very interesting company. They do, you know, great high profile projects, but they also distributed team. And, you know, they've had a lot of great designers work and developers in their ranks over the years and who've gone on to do really interesting stuff. They're just kind of entering the online tutorial video market, aren't they, with this?
Yes.
So it's 8 instructional courses highlighting HappyCog's method and best practices. So I think, this is interesting that they think there's a market for people wanting to know how they do stuff. And I think, you know, everyone likes an insight. Everyone wants to know how these successful agencies do work. So I think I'm tempted by that just to see how they do it, even if it's, you know, the tools and the techniques aren't necessarily something I do. I'm always intrigued to know how people work and the methods and methodologies and tools and techniques and stuff. But I also think, you know, they're going into a crowded space. There's a lot of online video tutorial, and they're charging a decent buck, and absolutely fair play. Regular price, $149, but you can get all eight for $99 if you buy now. So I think...
But you can buy them individually.
But you can buy them individually as well. So I think, you know, they're hitting the bases there. It's a kind of a one-off payment, and I like that model. But you can also dive in if the SaaS module or, you know, the prototyping one was the one for you.
Or a responsive website or whatever.
But what I also like about it is you get the full transcript, which I think is brilliant. You get the video itself. You get supplemental materials, things like checklists, best practices, talking points, cheat sheets. And then you also get access to, and I'm not quite sure how they're going to do this, a 30-minute roundtable with the team to get an inside look in how we work with the topic at hand. So, I mean, you know, if you're starting out or if you're a small agency and you want to work out how these things go, I think that's brilliant. I mean, they've...
Yeah, it's incredible, yeah.
Up and running with SaaS, that looks good to me. Deploying websites by Ryan Island as well, who's you know, done an awful lot of stuff, I think, with the expression engine tutorials and things like that. So, yeah. Brilliant. I think, you know, this is really, really interesting. Definitely worth a look. And you can get to...
I mean, you know, the fact that he's talking about, you know, Capistrano and Beanstalk and all these things, you know, is fairly unusual in these... video tutorial world as well.
Yeah,
I think
I couldn't agree more. And bundle pricing, or you can get group licensing if you're an agency and that kind of stuff. So yeah, an interesting departure, but one that they've obviously thought long and hard about, and it looks very well done.
I think the thing that really struck me was that the pricing has been really well thought out. You know, I've criticized, maybe not openly, but between you and I or other people that I know, other education, video education platforms for their pricing models in the past, because either I don't want it all, or I just want one course, or I don't want to subscribe. Why do I have to have $30 a month coming out of my account just because I want to see this particular course? Or I think it's completely flawed because you're paying $30 a month or whatever, you watch the course, you cancel.
So
I think that the granular way they've done it is just great.
Yeah, and I think $20, it's a consideration. It makes you value it, but it's not stupid money. So I think I'm going to keep an eye on that one for sure. That's filed in my pocket app.
It's definitely sort of one that I would point students to if they wanted to, you know, to learn more about how bigger agencies work.
Yeah, which I guess is something you might be talking with your cohort at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Not that many of them are actually going to, you know, particularly focused on entering this industry, but they're more focused on entering the media industry, and as a result, you know, want to know about web design and web development. But knowing this kind of thing could be really useful to them, just in terms of, you know, working practices and things.
Yeah, we all wanted a job in the media, but...
Media.
And ended up in web, but that's another story.
It is.
Yeah, and so... moving on to my final one, and this is another app entering into the fray of sort of online writing, and this is called Box Notes by the fine folk at Box.com, which I have to confess I don't use Box.com.
Okay. I don't either.
But I believe it's kind of way of sharing. Is it kind of like a Dropbox? Is it that kind of thing?
I don't know, honestly. We're obviously really well informed here.
I know, but someone tweeted this out, and apologies, I've forgotten who, but it struck me because we collaborate on the show notes, we collaborate on editorial stuff for Digest, and I work with Elliot that way, and we tend to use Google Docs. You know, we've used shared files in Dropbox and that kind of stuff, but, you know, it's never really kind of... nothing's beaten the Google, just for simplicity and drive and all those kind of things. But let's just...
I think looking at Box, it's more of a document management system, come Dropbox type solution.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's more, you know...
But this just struck me as if you watch the video and stuff, it's just... I think they've worked hard on the interface. It feels nice. Feels like they've taken some care. It's not in your face with a lot of options, and the commenting and who's edited with the avatars is really nice. And I don't know, it just feels like they've really worked hard at finding, working on the problem and then potentially solving it. But yeah, I should have gone into more detail whether you need a box account or anything. But it's definitely worth a look. And the only reason I really wanted to highlight it is because we've talked about these kind of writing environments before and collaborative tools.
Yes.
And also very recently, was it last week? I think Editorially, which we've talked about before, has come out of beta.
They are out of beta, yeah.
And yeah. It'd be interesting to see where that goes. I think they've done a lot of iterations and responded to a lot of the feedback. I think Mandy Brown in a blog post sort of said how many correspondence they've how many emails they've had in and how many she's responded to and how many feature requests and how many sort of changes to the app there have been over time.
I mean, she was emailing out, not personally, I'm sure, but it was personally signed by her and came from her email address and said, please give me feedback, or if I stopped using it for a couple of weeks, she'd email me. And so, I mean, again, it's not her, is it? But it's coming from her email address. So if I pressed reply, it would go straight back to her.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I had a few sort of things that when I was using it and giving it a good try that sort of fed back on and things have changed. But I think the Editorially, I love the way that you can roll back and you can see where the big changes have happened.
Yeah.
It's very, the interface is really, really well thought out there. But also, the draft is the one that I've talked about before as well, and that they just keep adding the features to that, but it doesn't seem to bloat out the offering. I really quite like it. You can compose your blog posts and push it to Tumblr or WordPress or even short tweets you can use it for and just push it out. But in the latest email that they sent out telling us about it, they've added in something known as the Hemingway mode, which I thought was interesting. So,
yeah.
Apparently, the adage "write drunk, edit sober" is attributed to Hemingway. So they've added in is a rather convoluted keystroke. I think it's four keys that you have to press in unison, and this takes you into Hemingway mode, where basically you cannot delete anything. You just have to push out the prose. And be damned, and then go back to it later and edit it, which I thought was quite interesting. I wonder how many times have you typed out 200 words and then just Control A or Command A or whatever, Apple key A, and deleted it all.
Yeah.
So I thought that was quite funny, sort of the Hemingway mode. But yeah, I think the box notes looks good. It, but I just I can't help but wonder what I switched from Google Docs a long time ago. I have Open Office, but only when people send me things that I can't open, don't necessarily want to upload to Drive just to have a quick look at, spreadsheets and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm pretty much ensconced in Google Docs, rightly or wrongly. And I wonder where the market is for things like this. Any ideas?
No, I don't know. I mean, I think that, the thing that I felt about Editorially was that it worked really well while I was collaborating.
Yeah.
Like this is what I was saying to a friend of mine recently. We were talking about it, who was saying that he used it for a couple of weeks and then stopped using it. And I kind of had the same experience. But what I'm finding is that, I don't particularly find Google Docs that great for collaboration.
No.
But Editorially really does feel like it only really works with collaboration.
Right, yeah.
I mean, maybe that's just my take on it, but I don't know why I would open this is the thing. I feel about lots of things in the digital world these days is that where is your stuff? All my stuff is in Google Docs because loads of people use it, and I've just traditionally used that, as you just said. So suddenly if I go to Editorially, if I want to use a doc that I've written elsewhere in Editorial, I have to at that time I had to cut and paste it in because there was no import feature. Now they may have added an import feature, it should be interesting to go and check that out. But I found that I just end up working, and the same thing applies to for music, or I've got my playlist on Spotify, so I keep using Spotify even though everyone tells me RDO is better. Or I keep using Apple TV because all my films that I bought on iTunes are there. So I think that, it to a certain extent, they're battling against people's, stuff, as it were, all being in one place, already being in the cloud with Google Docs or whatever it might be.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree.
Or if their stuff's all local, I mean, that might be easier because then you're suddenly, for the first time, you're able to collaborate. But, I really think that a lot of these platforms are going to have, A, migration problems, but B, you know, saying to somebody, selling it to somebody that it is easy to migrate, if it indeed is easy.
Yeah, which you don't necessarily want to be a selling point of your proposition, do you? By the way, if you don't like us, you can easily take your stuff with you to somewhere else. It should be,
exactly.
The small print, but important print.
But that's what everyone's thinking about these days, is if I write a document in this, am I going to come, to, you know, 2 months down the line, am I going to be like, where's that document? Because the stuff in editorial, I thought to myself, where's that document?
No.
I've looked in docs, and it's not there. I've realised that I wrote it in editorial while I was trialling editorially.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's an interesting space for sure, and you know, the big G seems to be winning, not necessarily the hearts, but maybe the minds of the people using it. But yeah, we shall see. Want to keep an eye on, I guess, but
definitely, yeah.
But yeah, a real mixed bag, as is always the case,
as
and
always.
No dog related tech this week.
Sorry about that.
I just worry that you're running out of.
Well, no, obviously not.
Dog related technology.
Well, actually, there is some news.
Oh, what?
Packlove.com.
Oh yes, our friends at Packlove
have changed their name
to what?
To Dogpack, I think. Let me check.
Really.
Dogpack.com, I think it is.
Oh, that's... I like Pack.
No, not Dogpack.com. I'm advertising someone else's site here. Packdog, maybe?
Packdog. Hmm. Perhaps they were getting some sort of the wrong kind of traffic to the site with Packlove.
No, that's not it either. I'm trying to work out what... They changed their name. They sent me an email about it. Oh, yes, this is it. Packdog.com.
Packdog.
Packdog.com. And they're just called Pack...
Right.
Now,
okay.
There's no Packlove.
Oh, have they changed their homepage? They've got kind of that thing where they do the whole video and then the white text over it and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some...
I'm logged in, so I don't get that. But
oh,
I've had three people have liked Whistler.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think I might have invites. So people want, if someone wants to be invited.
Are you going
to
do what they used to do when people had dribble invites? Like, you know, send me a picture of your dog and I'll judge whether
I'll
deem it appropriate to join the dog pack.
Yeah, I saw someone do that recently, actually. I thought Dribble was open to sign up, but someone was like, you know, send me your portfolio and I'll consider drafting.
Yeah, it's like, who am I? Who am I to judge?
God, terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, well...
I'm sure they didn't intend that either.
No, absolutely not. But anyway, so I'm just mesmerised by this like animated GIF of these dogs and stuff.
I love that.
Pack.
The video in the background.
Oh, it's like kissing a dog. Oh, it looks smelly. Anyways, enough of the dogs. Enough of the pack dog, the pack love, or whatever it is these days. We can chat more about the beautiful responsive website they've got next time out.
Indeed.
But yeah, that was episode 16. Just as a side note, the Freelance Web podcast, which I do listen to, our friend Sean said they were catching us up. Well, actually, they were beating us with episode 16. They said we'd got a little bit slack, but we're now taking things seriously. So hate to be called slack, so we're back on it.
Yeah, we're back on it.
Back on it. But yeah, if you don't listen to the Freelance Web, it's a good show. I've said it before. I'll say it again. That sounded a bit too DJ, didn't it? But anyways, enough of that. Thanks for listening, as always. And should you have any feedback, then obviously we don't have comments, but we do have a Twitter, Back to Front Show, at Back to Front Show. Or you can email in, Kia@backtofrontshow.com. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Cheers.